This is Serenade Radio with the best in easy listening. Now here's Mark Stein with Stein's Song of the Week.
One night in September 1959, Oscar Hammerstein II came home late for dinner to his house on 63rd Street in Manhattan. He'd been for a doctor's appointment and been told he had a stomach ulcer. His new Broadway show was just about to begin its out-of-town tryout in New Haven, Connecticut, but the author would have to miss it and go in for an operation. On the big day, Dorothy Hammerstein and their sons, William and James, went to the hospital and afterwards were given the bad news by the surgeon. They had removed 3/4 of Mr. Hammerstein's stomach, but had been unable to get all the cancer cells. A giant of the American theatre had less than a year to live.
My day in the hills has come to an end, I know. A star has come out to tell me it's time to go. But deep in the dark green shadows are voices that urge me to stay. So I pause and I wait and I listen for one more sound or one more lovely thing that the hills might say. The hills are alive with the sound of music, with songs they have sung for 1,000 years.
What to do? Because of the kind of super positive person he was, Oscar's son William told me, we decided not to tell him. But they had to tell his writing partner, Richard Rodgers. So in New Haven that week, Rodgers knew, but Hammerstein didn't, that the most successful team in Broadway history was trying out its last show. And at the back of the Schubert Theatre, listening to the first audiences on the planet cheer for the sound of music, Rodgers heard only the death rattle.
A crazy planet full of crazy people is somersaulting all around the sky. And every time it turns another somersault,
Oscar Hammerstein II, eternally the most optimistic of Broadway lyricists.
While somersaulting at a cockeyed angle, we make a cockeyed circle round the sun. And when we circle back to where we started from, another year has run. And there's no way to stop it, no, there's no way to stop it.
The composer was different. As always, Richard Rodgers was business first. After getting the news, he called in his daughter, Mary, a talented writer in her own right. She's the author of, among other confections, Freaky Friday, which they turned into a Lindsay Lohan film. And back then, she was busy working on her own first musical, Once Upon a Mattress. In the event that Oscar got too sick, her father wanted to know, would Mary be available to handle rewrites and extra lyrics? In mid-October 1959, the production moved on to Boston. Oscar Hammerstein was well enough to take the train up from New York. As usual, usually happened on a Rodgers and Hammerstein show, everything was going smoothly with just a few peripheral matters to be attended to here and there. Yet after watching the show in Boston, and with only a week and a half till they moved on to Broadway, the writers felt there was something lacking in the score. The plot of The Sound of Music is often mocked. Captain meets nun in Nazi Austria. But it works if you get the underlying emotions right. Baron von Trapp, whose family has lived on this land for generations, is facing a terrible decision. Hitler's Anschluss is transforming his country, and he has no choice but to leave it. But for that to have any impact on an audience, you have to understand that this man loves his native land, and that fleeing it will exact a toll. How to express that? A song, obviously, but what kind of song? Actor and folk singer had been cast in the role and could certainly relate to the von Trapp experience because he'd lived it. He had been born in Vienna, but his family had escaped to the British Mandate of Palestine after the Anschluss. More to the point, he could also strum the guitar. So Dick and Oscar figured they should write a number Baron von Trapp could play live on stage, an old, quote-unquote, Austrian folk song, to be performed in Act Two as part of the Trapp family's singing act at the so-called Kaltzberg Festival. So that autumn of 1959, in a room at the Ritz-Carlton hastily furnished with a piano, the last ever Rodgers and Hammerstein song was written. As always in this partnership, the lyric came first, just words on paper. Edelweiss, Edelweiss, every morning you greet me, small and white, clean and bright, you look happy to meet me. It's such a simple idea, but the von Trapps have already decided to flee Austria, and even if the audience at the Kaltzberg Festival and the various big-shot Nazis don't know that, we, the audience at the play, most certainly do. Today, most writers would hit the thing head-on and do some, "Oh God, I love this land, I'm gonna miss it, why did things have to turn out like this?" Overwrought, ululated power ballad. But Hammerstein was a sure enough dramatist to know that when the captain starts singing about a small white flower, everyone in the audience would understand how much he loves his country.
Edelweiss, Edelweiss, every morning you greet me, small and white, clean and bright, you look happy to meet me. Blossom of snow, may you bloom and grow, bloom and grow forever. Edelweiss, Edelweiss, bless my homeland forever.
Edelweiss grows up high in rocky terrain north of 6,000 feet or so, and it's long been a symbolic bloom in the Alps. In 1907, the Emperor Franz Joseph made it the official emblem of the Habsburg Empire's mountain troops, and it remains their insignia in the Austrian army to this day. On the other hand, the Wehrmacht and the SS also made it the official emblem for their mountain troops. Nonetheless, it took a couple of New Yorkers in a Boston hotel room to wring the full symbolic juice out of the flower. Earlier in the show, Gretel presents a small bouquet of Edelweiss to the Baroness Elsa von Schrader upon her visit to the von Trapp home. And so Hammerstein decided to extend its metaphorical power. Edelweiss is the Austria that will endure, and when the winter of tyranny melts, will flower anew. As always, Hammerstein's deft, memorable imagery is hopeful. Blossom of snow, may you bloom and grow. It's a small song for a big moment, and Rodgers set it to a wistful waltz tune, simple and folk-like but very affecting. It went into the show immediately in Boston and was an instant success. In a production otherwise dominated by its female star, Mary Martin, and a score tailored to her needs, it was Theodore Bickel's only real number, and audiences loved it.
Edelweiss, Edelweiss, every morning. Small and white, clean and bright, you look happy to meet me. Blossom of snow, may you bloom and grow, bloom and grow forever. My homeland forever.
6 years later, for the film, Christopher Plummer was one of the greatest actors of our time. I could watch him in almost anything. But he wasn't a guitar player, so the instrumentation loses something of its initial simplicity. Nor was he a singer. So they had him dubbed by Bill Lee. But this is Mr. Plummer's demo of the song, and it's a wee bit tentative, but very real. And years ago in Montreal, I had the pleasure of telling him how appealing it was and that they should have kept it in the picture.
Edelweiss, Edelweiss, every morning you greet. Small and white, clean and bright, you look happy to meet me. Blossom of snow, may you bloom and grow, bloom and grow forever. Bless my homeland forever.
Edelweiss,
Edelweiss, every morning you greet me. Small and
small and white.
Clean
and bright, you look happy to meet me.
Blossom of snow, may you bloom and grow, bloom and grow forever.
the film, Ernest Lehman's screenplay gives more weight to the song and makes it a symbol of renewal not just for a nation, but in a personal sense too. In the show, it's heard once in that second act scene of the Trapp family's performance at the festival. In the film, it's sung twice, first at the family home by Baron von Trapp and his children in a scene intended to show that Sister Maria's presence has not only rekindled his love for music, but reconnected him to his family. And then secondly, at what in the film is now the Salzburg Festival. In its reprise, the song is a show of defiance, not just by the von Trapps, but by other patriots in the festival crowd. It's similar to the moment in Casablanca, when everyone at Rick's starts bellowing out the Marseillaise to the fury of the Germans. Captain von Trapp's voice falters, Sister Maria helps him out, and then everyone at the Salzburg Festival, except the Germans, joins in. Because Edelweiss is a beloved Austrian folk song, so everyone knows the words.
Edelweiss, Edelweiss,
small and white, clean and bright, you look happy to meet me.
After Rodgers and Hammerstein wrote the song, Theodore Bickel was leaving the theatre when he found a fan and fellow immigrant waiting at the stage door for his autograph. "I love that Edelweiss," said the theatre goer. "Of course, I have known it a long time, but only in German." Not for the first time, Oscar Hammerstein had done too good a job. Just as his Old Man River for Showboat is assumed by many to be an authentic 19th century spiritual, so Edelweiss is assumed to be an authentic Austrian folk song. Not so. In both cases, a great craftsman manufactured them to solve a structural problem with the storytelling. But he did it so well that they have become, for real, what they were only intended to simulate. Some years ago, Edelweiss was played at the White House at a state dinner for Austria's president, and everyone but the Austrians stood up for the national anthem. Actually, no. The current Austrian anthem is Landeberger Land am Sturm. And the only official anthem Rodgers and Hammerstein ever wrote was the title number for their very first show. That is now the state song of Oklahoma. A couple of years back, a friend of mine was inducted into the Oklahoma Hall of Fame, and we sang this as the state anthem.
Yeah.
And if you've got a song as good as that, it's almost worth setting up a breakaway republic just for it to be the national anthem of. But there is, in fact, an actual Austrian, or at any rate Austrian-American, Edelweiss, from 1882, published in Philadelphia and composed by F.E. van der Beek. Maybe they should have played that at the White House. In a curious example of how the lines between reality and show business blur, among the guests at that state banquet for the Austrian president was the elderly Sister Maria. No, not Julie Andrews, not Mary Martin. I'll let President Reagan tell it.
Honored guest, I said this morning, and I would like to say again, how happy and proud that Nancy and I are to welcome you to the United States for the first state visit by an Austrian president. I consider your visit a celebration of our common bonds and our common purpose. Before I say anything else, Mr. President, I want you to know that one of the best loved of all Austrian Americans is with us tonight, Baroness von Trapp. The Baroness and her family fled Austria shortly before the outbreak of World War II, and their story has become known to millions in the wonderful play and film, The Sound of Music. Since arriving in the United States, the Baroness has come to stand for Austrian integrity, wit, and charm. And perhaps more than any single other American, she's contributed to the deep friendship that our two nations enjoy.
The Austrian delegation wasn't thrilled by that. They're a bit ambivalent about the best-known song about an Austrian national emblem being a Broadway show tune.
So long, farewell, auf Wiedersehen, adieu.
Adieu, adieu, to you and you and you.
So long, farewell, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen.
I'd like to stay and taste my first champagne.
Oscar Hammerstein never lived to see his last lyric's greatest success. He knew he was in pain, and he figured out why. Not long after The Sound of Music opened, he went to see his doctor and demanded to be told the truth about his condition. That day, he had a lunch appointment with Richard Rodgers and told his composing partner what the other man already knew. His doctor had offered him three alternatives: another operation, which would be painful and could never cure the cancer, a trip to Washington for a new experimental treatment, which would also be painful and temporary, or he could do nothing except enjoy the time he had left with his family at their home in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. Rogers asked him which option he would choose. "I'm just going down to Doylestown," said Hammerstein, "and stay on the farm until I die." At the end of lunch, two sober, middle-aged men rose, shook hands, and parted.
So long, farewell, auf Wiedersehen, goodbye, 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 goodbye.
Dick Rogers recalled that during that lunch they'd been interrupted by a gentleman from a few tables away. He was visiting New York from the Midwest and asked if they'd mind autographing his menu. They obliged, and he then said, "I hope you won't mind my saying this, but one thing bothers me. You're both extremely successful men at the top of your profession, and I'm sure you don't have a worry in the world. I was just wondering, what could possibly make you both look so sad?" As President Reagan mentioned, the Von Trapps fled Austria and eventually settled a short drive from where I live in New Hampshire, over in the Green Mountains of Vermont. They run a very successful ski lodge and a rather good brewery, Von Trapp Beer. But some of them still sing. They were a famous singing family with a full set list of songs long before Rodgers and Hammerstein. And they can be a bit touchy about the Sound of Music stuff, contrasting the Von Trapp songs with what they call the non-Trapp songs. Nevertheless, for my Christmas show a couple of years back, here's my friend and neighbour from across the Connecticut River Valley, the granddaughter of Baron and Baroness Von Trapp, Elizabeth Von Trapp.
Edelweiss, every morning you greet me, small and white, clean and bright, you look happy to meet me, blossom of snow.
A song from Me to You, Elizabeth Von Trapp singing a number from the hit show made about her grandparents, her aunts and uncles and her dad, the last entry in the Rodgers and Hammerstein songbook. When Oscar Hammerstein died, Theodore Bickel was on stage every night on Broadway still singing Edelweiss, and he noticed something about the song. "This dying man writing the very last lyric of his career," he said. "The very last word he wrote was forever." And it is.
Stein's Song of the Week was presented by Mark Stein and produced for Serenade Radio by Brian Savin.